The Gone Cold podcast may contain violent or graphic subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
Located about 150 miles southeast of San Antonio on the Texas coast, Corpus Christi is perhaps best known for its expansive oil industry, or possibly the beach. It isn't Houston or Dallas, cities with well-known Texas true crime tales, such as the Candyman or the assassination of a president. Corpus Christi, to many Texans and perhaps an overwhelming majority of those who live outside the state who have even heard of it, is an unassuming place, not known for cold-blooded and senseless violent crime. But there seems to be something in the proverbial water in the city that translates from Latin to English as the body of Christ. Many of Texas's most horrific crimes have taken place in Corpus Christi. The early 1990s alone there saw a seemingly endless flow of news reports involving stabbings, some fatal, with motives ranging from squabbles between roommates to gang territory disputes to cocaine-fueled psychosis. But for the loved ones of Corpus Christi's unsolved homicides, the violence is grief-inducing and haunting, with no clear end in sight. For them, the victim's murder feels forgotten, and they might feel absolutely powerless to change that or any other outcome that might provide their loved one justice, and them, maybe, some semblance of peace. The friends and family of 33-year-old Gary Gillette and 24-year-old Stephanie Smith Gillette, victims of a savage double murder by knife and hatchet as they slept in 1985, continue to deal with painful uncertainty, among other problems out of their control that seem to have no end. Likely, too, do the loved ones of 1991 slaying victim Kim Marie Nunnery, 32 years old, whose nude body her killer discarded in a brushy field just outside city limits. Kim's head was badly bludgeoned, her neck and throat stabbed and slashed so many times she was almost decapitated. As in the case of Gary and Stephanie Gillette 8 years prior, the senseless and brutal murder of Kathleen Suckley in 1993 seemed to be headed towards justice, but for specific reasons unknown, that justice was hindered. Though those closest to Kathleen and even the cops weren't necessarily dealing with uncertainty, her case went cold.
Didn't let anybody get away with anything, and not in an obnoxious way. She would stick up for anybody. She was super cool. She was amazing, and I know everybody says that about people who have passed away, but she was amazing.
Kathleen Ellen Schleicher was born on December 6, 1963, in Glendale, California. She was the youngest of Betty and Kim Schleicher's 4 children and their only daughter. Even before she could participate, Kathy was exposed to her parents and brothers Kyle, Kevin, and Kurt competing in various sports, her mother Betty told us.
Actually, we were all got involved in volleyball early. At the time when it didn't even exist, we were like going to the schools and teaching them how to teach it. So she was on the sidelines in the playpen part of the time. We were a very athletic family, and she was very coordinated, but not at all competitive. So she had to put up with a lot of us competing in sports. And when all the boys were involved in football, she was always the little cheerleader starting at about 5. on the sidelines cheerleading, and that was a great part of her life.
Before Kathy came along, her brother Kyle enjoyed the privileges and benefits of being the baby in the Schleicher household. Naturally, the shift in the balance of that special treatment created a bit of sibling rivalry.
Yeah, she was my baby sister. Well, she was the fourth of four children, obviously. She was the baby. I was the third, so she was, in my eyes, she was a little bit spoiled because I was jealous. Because I was the third boy. And she was a girl, right? But she was very cute. And I was kind of like a bratty brother, really, honestly. Because we were a little bit jealous, we kind of picked on her a little bit because we felt like she got special treatment, right? And so, but, you know, we were probably normal brothers, but I remember one time, it's so funny. I think we were fighting, you know, and when we were kids, you know, she was probably three or four. I was like six or seven. And she, can't remember what she said, but she called me a butthead, right? And I said, "You don't even know what that means." And I'm going to tell mom and dad, and they're going to spank you. And I bribed her because she was worried that I would tell mom and dad that she called me a butthead. So that was the relationship which we had.
There is perhaps no greater prize for all of us bratty brothers of the world than a sister's Barbie collection.
You know, because she was a girl, she had her own room, and her room was pink. And I was a little kid. I didn't really understand jealousy, but I'm like, why does she have this room? And she has all these dolls, and I wanted to hang out in that room. And I would kind of play with her dolls, but the problem is I didn't really play with them correctly. I would basically throw them up in the air and kind of punch them out, you know. And she would get so mad at me because that's all I could do, you know. That was fun, you know. So a lot of the time she would kick me out of her room. And I'd be like, that's kind of mean, you know. I just want to play with your stuff.
Something that undoubtedly shaped the Schleicher kids was their grandfather's camp.
We grew up in a day camp, which is freaking unbelievable. I mean, my grandfather started a kids camp, and so all of us kids were in there, and we would ride horses, and we would do stuff that you would never see nowadays at all. I mean, we would do crazy stuff on horses and just playing with, you know, frogs. And the whole theme was ruggedness and stuff that kids don't really can't do in their normal lives, you know, just play in the mud, ride horses. We would build, there's a reservoir that we called the desert, especially in the summertime, and we would build forts, treehouse forts, in the trees. It's crazy. Yeah, I mean, just the stories about the camp, and I it's unbelievable. I mean,
Kathy had no problem hanging in there with her brothers, doing everything they did, catching frogs, getting muddy, and raiding the other team's treehouse forts. Kyle told us she became an excellent horseback rider too. But these activities had a different purpose for Kathy than they did for her brothers.
She was really about just having fun. She wasn't really that competitive. She was just very easygoing, you know. Not like me and Kevin. Kevin were both very competitive, right? With sports, you know. Maybe with everything, but...
Even considering growing up alongside her three brothers, and getting right in the mud with them, so to speak.
She liked dolls and pretty dresses and all the girly things.
She was kind of like a girly girl. She loves outfits. She loved to play dolls and stuff like that, you know.
In the early 1970s, smog and other forms of air pollution had become a major problem in Los Angeles and the surrounding areas, like La Crescenta, the suburb of L.A. where Kathy and her family lived.
So we decided to move to the beach when she was about 10 and moved to Dana Point, and we all had to quick figure out how to make a living. So her dad and I went into real estate and worked at that for many years.
Dana Point, California, is about 60 miles south of L.A., just southwest of San Juan Capistrano, well outside the City of Angels' nearly unbreathable and strikingly visible atmosphere at the time. For the Schleicher boys, who were all either teenaged or approaching it fast, moving to Dana Point and leaving their friends behind in La Crescenta was likely a big deal. Kathy, on the other hand, was young enough that the relocation didn't critically damage a social life. And, in fact, she had a new routine and a new set of friends in no time.
Well, she was going to school till about 3 o'clock every day. I was getting home about 3 so I could be there for the kids. And she had her own little R gang in the neighborhood. Four girls, I called them the Four Musketeers. Her friends were Molly and Gina and Patty and Kathy. And they were stuck together like glue in the neighborhood, having fun and just playing and having a normal life. She went on to junior high at Marco Forster. I was still working. Her dad went into real estate management. He was busy a lot. And let's see. And she and I were like buddies, probably too much. She was a very good little girl, even though the boys got spankings. In those days, we gave spankings for bad behavior, like one swat on butt. I don't remember ever doing that with Kathy. She was very cooperative, wanted to please. We were together constantly. And like I say, probably too much good friends rather than mom and daughter.
Instead of going the public school route, attending Dana Point High School like Kathy's older brothers, Kim and Betty Schleicher opted to place her and Kyle in a local private school, Capistrano Valley Christian. There, Kathy became even more active in sports and especially cheerleading, and of course began creating a social life and persona.
High school, normal high school, lots of sports and fun things and programs and dancing and a couple boyfriends, not a whole lot of boyfriends, maybe 2 or 3. I remember she and the girls were really excited when the boys at the big high school, Dana Hills, when the girls were seniors, the boys at the big high school started asking them out, and they thought they were really hot shots at that time.
Kathy's high school best friend and fellow cheerleader, Kristen, came from a home broken as the result of alcoholism. Because of this, Kathy, who was strong, very confident, and faced problems head-on, more or less took care of Kristen, acting as something of a mother figure throughout their academic careers at Capistrano Valley Christian.
Kristen got pregnant when she was like 15. And, of course, Kathy just loved little kids. That was her passion. So I remember her saying to Kristen, well, Kristen was going to get an abortion. And Kathy gave her a lecture. Kristen, you're not getting an abortion. You're not. You're going to keep that baby, and I'm going to be the dad, and I'm going to go through the Lamaze training, and I'm going to go through the labor, and we're going to have that baby together, and you're going to keep that baby, which she did. And with Kathy dragging herself in at like 6 o'clock in the morning, she'd been up all night going through the labor with Kristen. She was just white as a sheet and telling me all about how terrible it had been.
After graduating high school, Kathy Schleicher enrolled at San Diego State University, where she took classes for about a year before taking off to Park City, Utah to ski for the entirety of a winter, taking a job at a ski shop there. Her brother Kyle had since moved to Santa Monica, California, and when the ski winter was over, instead of returning home to Dana Point, Kathy decided to move to Los Angeles.
Kathy went to L.A. After the ski winter, she went to L.A. the girls got in, they were like in their early 20s, they're getting into their, doing their modeling and working in tanning salons and all this glamorous and getting into clothes and fashion. And of course I was always into designing and creating and making outfits for Kathy. And back in high school, I was doing a lot of sewing for her. And her friends would say, Kathy never wears clothes. She only wears costumes. So she was into fashion and she got involved in the garment district up there. And just to survive, she got a job at the tanning salon. That's where she met Lisa.
It was in the mid-1980s when Kathy met Lisa, and the two became the best of friends fast. Like a lot of the greatest friendships, they were very different people, and their immediate reaction to one another wasn't at all representative of the close bond they would ultimately share.
We worked together. We managed high-end tanning salons in Beverly Hills and Marina Del Rey. We didn't like each other for about 4 minutes, and then we became best friends.
No one else knew Kathy like Lisa did. As friends, the two became virtually inseparable. She told us what drew her to Kathy so quickly and so strongly.
She was amazing. And I know everybody says that about people who have passed away, but she was amazing. Everybody loved her. Everyone was drawn to her. She was super cool. She was gorgeous. She had a very strong face, but she was also gorgeous on the inside. And she would stick up for anybody. Like she was a few years older than me. So I felt like she taught me a lot about, calling people out. She didn't let anybody get away with anything. And not in an obnoxious way. She just had her morals. And, we were both managers, and she would call people out if they did whatever, if they got out of line. And I was more timid, and I learned, how to navigate through her. And she liked everybody. She was very kind to everyone. She was really fun, and she had every man under the sun wanting to marry her.
Since they were both far enough into adulthood, Kathy was also experiencing a whole new relationship with her brother Kyle.
I got closer to her when we lived together in L.A., and we would go out periodically on the town, Not that often, but it was nice to really hang out with her. And we talked about, when we were younger, and it was just more like an adult conversation, I was probably late 20s, she was maybe mid-20s, and then at some point she met Nat.
At a bar in Santa Monica, Kathy Schleicher met Nathaniel Suckley, better known as simply Nat. The Suckleys were originally from Toledo, Ohio, where Nat's parents, Peter and Luann, met. Luann Suckley was well-trained and well-schooled in nursing and nursing education, and even co-wrote the college textbook, The Last Word in Medical Terminology, after being recruited by Spahn Shoreline Hospital as an administrator and relocating to Corpus Christi, Texas in 1983. Luann's husband, Peter, was a longtime educator and ultimately finished his career at Flower Bluff High School in the coastal Texas city. For reasons not entirely clear to us anyway, Nat Suckley ended up in the Los Angeles area, and after he and Kathy met, the two began a whirlwind romance. Before anyone knew it, they were married.
Kathy had some disappointing boyfriends and relationships, and she met Nat not too much long after, maybe a year or two of working in a tanning salon, and she met Nat, and they dated shortly and got married, and that was a real quick thing that happened.
Kathy Schleicher became Kathy Suckley, and soon found out she was pregnant. In April 1989, she gave birth to her and Nat's first son, Dutch. This was everything to her. As you heard her mother Betty say, Kathy adored children and was thrilled to now be a mother. In fact, she was ready to start again almost as soon as Dutch was born, her best friend Lisa told us.
You know, when she wanted to have Cody, I kept telling her to wait. You know, wait a little bit longer because it's going to be hard. And she's like, nope, I want Dutch to have a buddy. I mean, now I'm like, thank God she didn't listen to me because Cody's here.
In August 1991, Kathy and Nat became proud parents again when she gave birth to Dakota, or Cody. Lisa, of course, was more than happy to share the struggles of motherhood with her best friend and helped her whenever and however she could. It didn't take long before she was nearly as in love with Kathy's two boys as the mother was herself. In fact, the two had an agreement. If anything were to ever happen to Kathy, Lisa would take care of Cody and Dutch. Though neither one hoped, or even imagined, it was an agreement that would be necessary to fulfill. The births of Kathy and Nat's children might have brought her and Lisa even closer together, but life as a married mother soon put a 1,500-mile wedge between them. Kathy's brother Kyle told us why he believes she and Nat chose to move to Corpus Christi.
She wanted to get out of L.A., because L.A., there's a lot of distractions here. And you don't want, you know, she didn't want to raise her sons here also. I don't know why they didn't move to Orange County. I don't know. Maybe it's because of old news and she didn't want to go back there. I think Texas or Corpus Christi seems a lot more, at that time, it seemed a lot more family oriented, I believe. His parents lived there and I think maybe it's a slower life. That's what she wanted. She really wanted to raise her sons right. Her kids were everything. That's why it was so hard, you know.
Lisa, on the other hand, wasn't quite as accepting of her best friend's choice to jump state.
Oh, that drove me crazy. They moved there two times. The first time they moved there, they stayed a month and came back because his parents lived there. And they're like, oh, Corpus is great, you know, such a family place. You should move here. So they went down there, they stayed a month, and they came back, which I was super happy. And then they ended up going again, same thing. But anyway, there was no jobs. She had really hard time finding work. I'm like, what are you doing here? You know, it wasn't the American dream that his parents were presenting.
Upon moving to Corpus Christi in April of 1992, Kathy and Nat rented one side of a duplex on the city's south side, on Meandering Lane. Nat's parents, Peter and Luann, of course, were long established in the area and well-liked and respected. His brother Daniel, too, was a popular lifeguard at Mustang Island Beach across the bay. The Suckley's family reputation about town certainly didn't hurt Nat and Kathy's chances at making it in Corpus Christi. Still, Kathy failed to land a job that suited her.
I remember Kathy calling and saying, Mom, I can't get a job. I can't get a job down there. I've been working as a waitress, but nobody gives me any tips. She was really disappointed. And she finally got a job out at the Greyhound racetrack, working as a waitress out there for Mr. Steve Connor, and I think you heard that part of the story.
We'll get to that guy soon enough. Waiting tables at the Corpus Christi Greyhound Racetrack Restaurant, a relatively new facility that opened in late 1990, was certainly not what Kathy wanted to do. And anyway, the coastal Texas city didn't necessarily fit the picture the LA woman had dreamt up. These things only exacerbated another problem Kathy faced, addictions that Nat struggled with. It's only necessary to bring up Nat's struggle to provide context for what follows. The exact details, however, have no direct bearing on Kathy's story, so we're going to leave it at that. By December of 1992, just 8 months after Kathy and Nat Suckley moved to Corpus Christi, Texas, from the Los Angeles area, they separated, and Nat moved back to California. The specific circumstances and incidents that led to Kathy Suckley and Nate Suckley splitting up at the end of 1992 are not directly relevant to her story. But the circumstances that happened as the result of their separation likely are.
She was fed up with Nat. He got into some stuff she didn't approve of, and she kicked him out. And she was going to make it on her own and raise those two boys by herself.
However, that turned out to be harder than Kathy thought. On top of caring for Cody and Dutch, the newly single mother was working full-time. Kathy was also somehow managing to take classes at Del Mar Community College, then known as Corpus Christi Junior College. With Nat having gone back to California, and her best friend Lisa living there as well, Kathy's resources were fairly slim.
She needed help with the kids. You know, here, if the kids weren't with her, they were with me. We passed them back and forth all the time. And she always thought she could handle it on her own if she had to. But then she discovered it was a lot harder than she thought it would be, especially at that age.
Things weren't all looking down for Kathy, her mother Betty told us. In fact, at this point in early 1993, she'd taken a job as a fitness instructor at Future Firm Fitness Center.
Trying to get out of that restaurant, and she was fed up with Nat, and she was going to make it on her own, and evidently she got another job at a workout center near where she lived, where she could walk, about 2 blocks away. And she was all excited about it. She was going to set up a babysitting program for this new workout center. And she just loved little babies and kids. And she told me, I'm so excited because they hired me to set up the kids program at the workout center, which she could have walked there and it would have been really convenient.
This, of course, would have benefited Kathy tremendously since she could bring 2-year-old Dakota and almost 4-year-old Dutch to work with her. But just before she was to start her new job, fate once again reared its ugly and cruel head.
The boys got sick with chicken pox, and then they got the flu, and then she got the chicken pox. So she was miserable, and she called me like 6 o'clock in the morning. And I don't think she had ever asked me for help. Kathy was a person who wanted to do it all herself. She was pretty independent. She could solve her own problems. She was little Miss Psychologist in high school, junior high probably too, and wherever she was, little Miss Psychologist, always listening and always counseling and always trying to fix all her friends, and loved helping people. So she probably would have been a great psychologist if she'd ever gotten into that field. But so I don't think she'd ever asked me for help. But that morning when the kids were so sick, she called at 6 o'clock in the morning. I thought this was really strange because she really didn't ask me for help that I could remember. And she was crying and she was telling me the kids were sick and she had been sick and she wasn't going to be able to get that job because she was supposed to start next week.
Betty talked her daughter through her tough time. And the next time they spoke, Kathy seemed to be doing well. She had started her new job, and Kathy and the boys had planted and were maintaining a small vegetable garden in the backyard. Lisa had also been counseling her best friend and was scheduled to come to Corpus Christi from California to help out with the boys in early April of 1993. But that fell through.
I didn't talk to her that last week. I was supposed to be there. She needed help with the kids, but I got sick. I had the flu, and then I was supposed to be in a wedding here. I asked her if I could come after the wedding, if I could, you know, change when I was coming. And he was there when I was talking to her on the phone the last time.
That man Lisa spoke about being with Kathy the last time they talked was Stephen Connor. Kathy Suckley's manager at the Corpus Christi Greyhound Racetrack restaurant, where she waited tables. The last week that Lisa referenced not speaking with Kathy was the week leading up to Thursday, April 8, 1993. That afternoon, using a key Kathy Suckley had given him, Stephen Connor let himself into her duplex apartment on Meandering Lane. He claims that the two were supposed to have lunch that day, but upon arriving at her place of employment, Future Firm Fitness Center, Connor discovered that she never showed up that morning, and he became worried. Connor entered Kathy's home at about 12:45 p.m., he says, and found her lying on a pool of blood in her bed, a pillow covering her face. Kathy's two boys, 2-year-old Dakota and 3-year-old Dutch, were in the house, unable to understand why their mother couldn't wake up to feed them.
Somebody said that Dutch was under her bed. Well, that room where she was must have been just covered with blood. I mean, the whole room was probably a mess. And I think Cody was still in the crib, but he would have needed his diapers changed and everything by about noon, and they were probably hungry.
They were, no doubt, frightened by the blood, but luckily uninjured, at least physically. Kathy Suckley's murder was, of course, devastating to those who loved her, and the ripple effects continued to wreak uncertainty, anguish, and trauma for decades, still as prevalent and painful to this day, 29 years later. And we'll discuss that further as we continue Kathy's story. When you lose someone you care deeply for, you never forget the moment you were told. Kathy's best friend Lisa, her brother Kyle, and her mother and father, Betty and Kim Schleicher, certainly remember. Nat Suckley, Kathy's estranged husband, is who told Lisa.
He called me at my work and told me. And when I got home, he was laying in my front lawn. So I was with him immediately after she died. I started drinking wine because I was like throwing up. I mean, I was not well. It was making me sick.
Yeah, it's amazing how it goes back. I was just saying, what? What? I was just crying. I said, there's no way. I said, she's so young. And yeah, but it just blew me away. I was like, what? That's when I first heard about it. And then, it was pretty tough. And I couldn't sleep for a couple of nights. Both of my brothers and my parents were just, it takes your breath away. I mean, you just can't function for a while, you know? And my parents, for some reason, they were just too broken up to go fly out to Corpus Christi, I don't know, to see what's going on, and because they're going to have a service there. I volunteered to fly out there with Lisa, actually. And it was heartbreaking because my parents are very, very strong people, and they just couldn't even function.
How and when did we find out that Kathy had died? Her dad got a call from Texas, and he said, this is the police department in Corpus Christi, Texas, and your daughter's dead.
That's the way he said it.
That's all he said.
Is this
Mr. Schleicher? Your daughter's dead. That was pretty brutal.
The voice you heard behind Betty was Kathy's father, Kim Schleicher. On the next episode of Gone Cold, we'll discuss details of the investigation into Kathy's murder, including the district attorney's attempt at getting an indictment. If you have any information about the murder of Kathleen Ellen Suckley, now is the time to come forward and provide it so her family, which includes her closest friend, Lisa, can finally see justice for her. Tips can be submitted to the Texas Rangers by calling 1-800-346-3243 or through their cold case website at dps.texas.gov/cold case. We'll provide the link that takes you directly to Kathy's DPS cold case webpage in the show notes. To be eligible for a reward, you can call the Texas Crime Stoppers hotline at 1-800-252-TIPS or 1-800-252-8477. All tips provided there are done so anonymously, and tipsters are provided a number instead of using a name. Special thanks to Lisa, Kyle, Betty, and Kim for your contributions to this episode and for continuing to seek justice for Kathy. The Corpus Christi Caller Times and KIIITV.com were used as sources for this episode. If you're looking for something meaningful to donate to, I've got a couple in mind. Murdered in 2007, Brittany McGlone has been denied justice for close to 15 years. It looks like current investigators are going to utilize advancements in technology to try and identify her killer, but they also need help gathering other evidence to bring to trial, should that day come. We would be grateful if you would consider donating to Brittany's Wood County Crime Stoppers Reward Fund, as would her amazing family. If you'd like more information on Brittany McGlone's case, our episode covering it includes interviews with her family, as do our episodes about Leon Lorales, whose case could also use your help. A GoFundMe has been created by Leon's family to help them afford a private investigator to find his murderer. It would mean the world to Leon's family and us if you would help. If you're wondering why a PI is necessary in Leon's 1996 murder case, you can refer back to our episodes, which should make that abundantly clear. We'll provide links in the show notes on where to go to help fund both the Brittany McGlone and Leon Lorales cases. Thanks from the bottom of our hearts. You can support the show at patreon.com/gonecoldpodcast. There, you can get the show ad-free and enjoy Patreon-exclusive episodes that tell stories of mostly solved Texas crimes and the bad actors who perpetrated them. I get those out as much as I can, which is not as often as I would like. Another way you can support Gone Cold is by leaving us a 5-star rating and written review on iTunes or wherever else you listen. Thank you in advance. Those reviews help Gone Cold's visibility, which helps new listeners find us, which increases the potential for someone with information hearing the show and reporting what they know to authorities. Thanks for listening, y'all.